Unsere Empfehlung für deinen Podcast? Frisches Obst und knackiges Gemüse von Aldi. Immer gut, immer günstig, immer vielfältig. Kurz gesagt, Frische für alle. Zum Aldi-Preis. Diese Woche Zespri Sangold Kiwi. Das Stück für nur 55 Cent. Oder dunkle Tafeltrauben. 500 Gramm für nur 1,79 Euro. Entdecke jetzt viele weitere Angebote in deiner Aldi-Nord-Filiale. Und weiter geht's. Einfach lauschen und genießen. Aldi. Gutes für alle.
Stu does America.
I've escaped Washington, D.C. and made it back to Texas. So glad to be here. Watch us completely free on YouTube, youtube.com/StuDoesAmerica. Be sure to hit subscribe and click the bell for notifications. Stu Does America merch is available as well. StuDoesMerch.com. Use the code STU10. Get 10% off your entire order. Glenn Beck is here with the real reason Trump is so interested in Greenland and the Panama Canal. We may have finally reached the end of America's DEI days. That would be nice. We'll have the latest for you there. But we're going to start by doing Trump's first day back. And man, there's a lot to pack into this. This is has to be the most aggressive first day of any president in my lifetime. Trump just going for it. And this is one of the benefits of being in office for 4 years, learning the gig a little bit on the job. There's no question about that. He's talked about that a little bit. And then having 4 years to sit back and stew over how annoyed you are that you no longer have the job so you can come back and make sure things are done right in your eyes the first day. And he has given us a blockbuster first day. Trump executive orders and actions by the numbers from the Hill kind of lays it out. 26 executive orders. We'll go through a bunch of them here coming up in a second. 12 different memos, 4 proclamations, and 78 Biden executive actions withdrawn. Now, that's the good stuff right there. I love the withdrawing of executive action. But like, it's not just that. It's not just, hey, that last guy sucked, which he did. It's also, hey, we've got a vision for the future. This is not, you know, it seems different. I mentioned this on the radio show, I think, when we were talking about the difference between 2016, the 2017 first term and this one. Like, the speech was the American Carnage speech, as it's kind of become known, which, you know, isn't really a fair summary of what he talked about. But it did have a lot of sort of like negative outlook, like, wow, we really have things have gone poorly. We need to turn this around. Look at all these terrible things that have happened. Coming into office this time, it feels different. It feels like, hey, wait a minute, maybe there's a positive outlook here. Maybe there's a plan for the future. Not to say that he didn't have a plan in the first term exactly. He did. It was, had a lot of people around him. Many people didn't really agree with that agenda. A lot of people from the establishment that were kind of pushing back and trying to keep him through more narrow guardrails. He's done with that. I mean, like, and if you like him, that's great. If you don't like him, it's probably bad, right? Like, it's you're looking at this like, holy crap, what's going to happen? But the bottom line is he is doing what he can within the powers of the executive branch to change the country in a way that will, I think, certainly do a lot better than Joe Biden was doing, but something that's very aligned with his vision of what the world should be. And that's what happens when you become president. He's just doing it in a way that is much more unapologetic, right? He's not waiting. He's not saying, let me give a watered down version of this because some people in my party don't like it. He's just going for it. And that's exactly what he was elected to do. So let me go through some of it. There's a lot here. Immigration crackdown. He begins that with the moves to end birthright citizenship, deploy the military to the border, and more. Let's go through a bunch of the different parts of this. Mr. Trump cited extraordinary presidential powers to effectively suspend U.S. asylum law, accusing migrants of staging an invasion at the southern border and endangering public health. He authorized officials to repel, repatriate, or remove migrants suspending their physical entry into the U.S. through his constitutional powers. The far-reaching order essentially allows the U.S. government to stop adhering to American asylum law until Mr. Trump issues a finding that the invasion of the southern border has ceased. Now, this won't be interesting in court. They will say, OK, well, asylum law exists. You can't just override it with an executive order. Of course, the left loves, adores doing this type of stuff when it comes to immigration on their side. They love to not enforce laws that exist. That's going to be an issue, and they're going to fight that one out in court. We do know, however, and you might not like the word invasion. Some people don't. But the bottom line is they absolutely are flouting our immigration system, particularly in the asylum area. They are just saying it, even though it's not true. That is a problem and it has to be dealt with. And the president is trying to do this one through executive order. We also have restarting the Mexico border wall. Mr. Trump has also instructed officials to restart construction of that wall, relaunching a massive multi-billion-dollar government project that had been halted by Joe Biden. During the Trump administration, about 450 miles of barriers were built along the southwest border. That's not a surprise, of course. This is an important part of his agenda. And also what, you know, again, this is one of those where Biden is the one really stretching the law here. The border wall was part of our plan. He's just halting it. Trump is just restarting it. So no surprise there. Federal agencies were also ordered to begin the process of reinstating the so-called Remain in Mexico policy, which requires migrants to wait for their asylum hearings on the Mexican side of the border. Biden's administration suspended that policy soon after taking office, though it was forced to revive it briefly due to a court order. Reviving the program will require the consent of the Mexican government, which it has not yet publicly agreed to. Now, of course, it's all part of the negotiations. With Mexico. Mexico is going to have to take that on. It seems like that's something they might actually do. It's a question of whether they will use it as a negotiating tool, honestly, to push back against other things Trump wants. So we will see how that plays out. National border emergency. He declared one at the southern border, calling the situation a grave threat to our nation. The president ordered the Defense Department to more heavily involve the vast resources and manpower of the U.S. military at the border, tasking officials to deploy as many units or members of the armed forces as needed to help the Department of Homeland Security obtain complete operational control of the border. That one is going to be challenged in courts as well, I'm sure, as well as this one definitely will and actually already has. One of Mr. Trump's most controversial immigration orders on Monday sought to deny birthright citizenship to the children of immigrants who are in the U.S. legally or on temporary visas. Mr. Trump directed federal agencies to stop issuing passports, citizenship certificates, and other documents to children born in the U.S. to mothers in the country illegally and fathers who are not citizens or legal permanent residents. Or to mothers who are temporary visa holders and fathers who are not citizens or legal permanent residents. This actually went a little bit farther than he talked about in the campaign most of the time. The plan that was, you know, kind of like pushed around was, look, if you're an illegal immigrant and you're here and you have kids, those aren't they're not going to be U.S. citizens. That part was the sort of fundamental foundation of this policy. It is expanded to people who are like on, you know, they're here legally, maybe not permanent green cards. I believe people with permanent green cards married to U.S. peoples, those would still be Americans. I believe the permanent green card has a carve out for it. But if you're here, even if you're here legally, but you're here, let's say, on a student visa, and you have a kid, you know, you're here for college, hopefully not for like middle school. If you're here for college and you have a kid, that kid is no longer automatically a U.S. citizen. Now, there's a part in the, we've been through the amendment, I won't go through because we don't have much time to go through all of the details here. There's an amendment where there's been a long-term conservative argument that this is a situation that it's the correct interpretation of the amendment. This is not Trump trying to change the law. What he is saying here is this is how the Constitution should be interpreted. This is was intended to cause a court challenge, and will have a court challenge. And the way the courts have looked at it so far is that Trump's view is wrong, that's not the way this is going to work out. Although we have a more conservative Supreme Court now, who knows where it goes? But this is a long road situation. It's not going to be something that is necessarily going to show immediate dividends, but it is something that conservatives have wanted to attempt in the courts for a very long time, and this will certainly give them that opportunity. Mr. Trump instructed officials to start the process of designating cartels and international gangs as foreign terrorist organizations, seeking to penalize the groups that largely control the illicit movement of migrants and drugs across the U.S. southern border. This is a process. You know, there's some behind the scenes stuff here that, you know, I've been talking about with some people who are working on these programs. They are going to go through and they're going to find the worst of the worst cartels. They are going to then designate them as terrorist organizations, and that's going to give them a lot of opportunity. I mean, you could see something maybe as far as taking, you know, special forces and going into these areas and dismantling these organizations. Normally, you wouldn't do that across foreign borders. You know, you'd think these countries would welcome that help from the U.S. government. They don't always do that, of course. So we will see how that goes. However, taking taking out cartels is something that Trump really cares about. I mean, you know, it's interesting. Trump is kind of seen as this, obviously, this real estate guy, a playboy at times, right? And with all of the, you know, you go back years and years and years, you have all the women that have that he's been in the media with, and obviously the multiple marriages and all that stuff. The guy's not a drinker. He's not a drug guy. He does not like them. He thinks they're very destructive. He's had to deal with these sorts of destructions in his family. It's very personal and important to him. And he also looks at the border as an issue with fentanyl and human trafficking and all those things very tied to those cartels. This is crucial to the president of the United States. This is as central to his belief system as anything. And he's going to do pretty much anything he can to stop it. Now, the cartels tend to have ways to try to push back against these things, as the Mexican government has found out. A lot of local Mexican officials who have taken on the cartels have found terrible endings to their lives and to their efforts. That is something that Donald Trump, I think, is very, very aware of and willing to take on as a risk. This is really important to him. Also, Trump suspended the U.S. refugee admissions program, once an initiative that enjoyed broad bipartisan support, citing the strain on the receiving communities. Mr. Trump's order directed officials to launch a review of whether restarting refugee admissions is in the national interest. He allowed officials to make some exemptions, to the suspension of admissions on a case-by-case basis. So that is that's just immigration. I mean, we could do the entire show just listing these things off and going through them. How about energy? Sweeping energy agenda is here. Trump laid it out. Here are the key actions he took on day one. Trump has declared a national energy emergency, arguing that the U.S. faces a precariously inadequate and intermittent energy supply, an increasingly unreliable grid that threatens national security. This is, of course, is true. I tell you that from a 20-degree Texas right now, which we've seen some of the failures. Now, Texas has a unique situation, but also a building situation. Everybody's moving here. All these people who they live in, Illinois and New York and California, and they complain about the energy situation. It gets so bad that they move to Texas and then they bring their votes here. Thanks. But that is something we are facing. And especially with the outlook, he announced a big AI program, which I didn't even put in the stack today. But $500 billion of investment coming to the United States is the claim. And that would have a massive need for more electricity. Everything with AI is going to take so much energy. And if we're going to lead the world in that, we're going to need those energy resources. Trump is taking that seriously and has not been taken seriously over the past 4 years. Trump ordered the U.S. to begin withdrawing from the Paris Climate Agreement, landmark international treaty, which is worthless, by the way. We've covered that many, many times. Seeks to limit the rising global temperatures to 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels. And we're already up right around 1 degree. I think we might be at 1.1 now. So that's going to be an interesting attempt, kind of a heavy lift when we're this far in the process. Under the treaty's terms, a country can exit the agreement 1 year after providing notification that it intends to withdraw. But Trump's executive order states that the U.S. will consider its withdrawal to be effective as soon as the United Nations Secretary General receives written notification. We're a sovereign nation. We went out of that treaty. We're out of that treaty. And if everyone's going to get pissed about it, they're going to get pissed about it. This is not like us saying, hey, we'll send you arms in the middle of a war. We'll protect your borders to NATO and then leaving that. This is a promise for a bunch of not even mandatory emission cuts. They're promised emission cuts. And frankly, it means nothing. It will do. By the way, it also would do nothing if successful. So that's something completely different. Trump also issued an order Monday that aims to maximize the production of natural resources in Alaska, which is why we bought the place, by the way. The order prioritizes the development of liquefied natural gas projects and directs the federal government to expedite permitting and leasing of energy projects in the state. A huge win. We should definitely do that, and we will be pursuing that. Trump ordered all federal agencies to immediately pause the disbursement of funds under the Inflation Reduction Act, the Biden-era climate law that actually said it was about inflation but had nothing to do with inflation, other than increase it. The president specifically ordered a halt to funding for electric vehicle charging stations and ordered his administration to consider ending subsidies and other policies that favor electric vehicles. And you think Elon Musk's running the country, is he? I mean, I know he says he's against those things. There have benefited the country. Tesla has benefited from a lot of those policies, but he does seem to be opposing them now. That being said, if he really wanted to give giveaways to his donors, that wouldn't be the approach you'd necessarily take. Trump targeted wind energy in a standalone executive order, temporarily suspended new or renewed leases of offshore and onshore wind projects, also halted leasing of the wind power projects in the outer continental shelf. So that is another approach. He's going now again. You can look at all this stuff as a whole and say, wow, this is a lot to do on day one. Yeah. And he's serious about this and he knows this timeline. Again, we've broken this down before, but you got a 4-year timeline. Two of those years are after the election, and who knows what's going to happen there if you can get anything done. One of those years, so year two, so year three and four are kind of like question marks, right? Usually the president loses control, so years three and four are very difficult. Year two is the lead up to an election where a lot of these blue state and purple state people in a very small majorities Republicans have are going to flake on stuff. So you're going to lose them, too. You got 1 year and really you got really, the first 100 days. Because they're going to worry, they're going to try to drag that out as long as possible. They're going to create this little tiny window where he can pass one or two things, and that's it. That's what they're going to do. That's what they're trying to do. So he's moving very, very quickly. Of course, the January 6th pardons are there, freeze hundreds of Capitol rioters from prison. What we believe has happened there is we know Steve Baker, our reporter, has been pardoned. That's very good. We'll talk about him maybe tomorrow or next week or something. I want to get his take on that. And pretty much everybody, basically. There were 16 members, I believe, out of this group that were had their sentences removed. And that's fine. They weren't necessarily as happy about that as the full pardon. But the people who really had maybe higher level interest in January 6th, maybe showed some pre-planning, maybe had some violent actions. Those people were not given the full pardon. They had the commutation, but still a good outcome. They're out of jail for them, at least. And of course, a lot of people who were just like convicted of nothing. Are out, and that's really the more important thing. Hundreds of Donald Trump supporters who had been serving prison sentences for participating in January 6th were freed, and more than 1,500 people total. By the way, the markets on that, we like to talk about the markets here on the show. Kalshi had that at, I think it was 34% chance he would pardon 1,000 people or more on the first day in office, 34% chance, and it happened. So I don't know, somebody made some money on that, I guess. Trump's pardons went further than many of his allies had signaled. Both J.D. Vance and Trump's attorney general choice, Pam Bondi, had previously said the people who had committed violence would not be pardoned. Now, they weren't. Many of them were not technically pardoned. They were had their sentences commuted. So commutation clause was part of that, though there probably were some in there. A lot of this has to do, too, with like I looked this up earlier. Like, I think it's Florida is the state I just happened to look at because I was going to get a summary of all the states. But like the typical person who would have assault of a police officer as their first offense in life would get probably around a year. So here we are. It's 2025. We're 4 years later. A lot of these people have served multiple years in prison already. So that might be part of the motivation that they got excessive sentences. Trump signs executive order for pausing foreign assistance for 3 months. This is directing the department and agency heads with responsibility of U.S. foreign development assistance programs to immediately pause new obligations and disbursements of development assistance funds to foreign countries, non-governmental organizations, the NGOs we talk about often, international organizations or contractors. The president calls for a review of these programs and look for efficiency. That's something that's smart. It's kind of the Doge approach, right? If we're going to be giving this money out, what actually works, what actually doesn't? Maybe Israel is one we want to keep. Maybe, who knows? I don't know. A lot of this stuff goes to waste and corruption. Some of it probably does some good. Let's identify which is which. At the very least, that's a good starting point. You know, America first doesn't mean America only. However, at the end of the day, foreign assistance, small part of our budget, but also a really unpopular thing that we do. The American people don't like it very much. They don't like giving away their money to other people unless it's an absolute must. And he's saying, let's find the absolute musts, I guess. Two biological sexes is another one. He says he's going to halt these diversity programs. We'll get into that a little bit more later. But the gender order states that it will defend women's rights and protect freedom of conscience by using clear and accurate language and policies that recognize women are biologically female and men are biologically male. Requires the federal government use the term sex instead of gender, and directs the State Department and the Department of Homeland Security to require that government-issued identification documents, including passports, visas, global entry cards, accurately reflect a holder's sex. This is the type of thing that it's hard to imagine that we would ever need. We've all known This is the truth from the very beginning, and now all of a sudden we need government orders to tell us this. Now, I mean, look, it's insane, but it needed to be done, clearly. Trump signs a death penalty order directing Attorney General to help states get lethal injection drugs. Comes right after the hours he returned to the White House, compelled the Justice Department not only to seek the death penalty in appropriate cases, but also to preserve capital punishment in states that have struggled to maintain adequate supplies. This is one of the ways they have worked against the death penalty in states, is to try to cut off their supply of the lethal injection drugs so that the death penalty can't be carried out against mass murderers and such. That looks to be reversed here. And finally, we have the executive order in attempt to stall the TikTok ban. This is another one that's going to go to court. In the order, one of Trump's first acts after taking office, instructs the attorney general not to take any action to enforce the law so that his administration has an opportunity to determine the appropriate course forward. Retroactive to Sunday, as he signed the order, Mr. Trump told reporters that the U.S. should be entitled to get half of TikTok if because it could be worth $1 trillion. I don't know if that's going to work. But here's the interesting part about this in particular. First of all, I would love that TikTok goes away forever because I can't stand it. That's separate from the law, and no one cares really about that. Trump likes TikTok now. He was for the ban initially, doesn't really like it now. That being said, the law itself says you can have a delay on a deal. The issue is, of course, it had to be done by January 19th before he came into office. That's why you saw that retroactive delay. I don't know if that's going to work. So you're saying afterwards, actually, this goes back to the 19th. Well, Biden would have had to do that on the 19th. So I don't think that's going to hold up. It's going to be a problem. Not to mention, to have a delay in this law, this is a congressionally passed law. To have that delay, you have to have a deal in place, and that steps have been taken already for the deal to take place. So it can't just be like, oh, well, we think we're going to sell it eventually. It has to already be in place and in moving in that direction. So that didn't happen. My guess is someone's going to challenge this in court, and it's probably going to get blocked. Though all of a sudden, both parties are like, we don't want to ban TikTok. What are you talking about? We're going to have no 20-year-old people to donate to us when they become of age to donate. We can't do that. They're both kind of doing that right now. They're both running away from it. The courts probably won't, though. So likely, eventually, this will go through. But I think he's looking for a delay to see if that sale can take place. Okay. That's just part of it. Glenn Beck went through a lot of this on radio as well. He's going to join me next with even more things Donald Trump is taking steps to accomplish in his early hours. It's playoff time. Yes, football is here. Of course, as you know, I'm a dedicated Philadelphia Eagles fan. The Eagles, of course, won this past weekend. And I gotta be honest with you, I've been doing kind of crappy on Prize Picks lately because the way I've been using it recently, sometimes I'll go on there and try to find the best picks. I've done pretty well with those. When it comes to me sort of hedging my life, which is, hey, I'm going to put really good results in my Prize Picks lineup for the opponent of the Eagles and put bad things in for the Eagles themselves, because that way, if the Eagles lose, at least I get paid. And you can make some serious cash on Prize Picks. They have over 10 million members and billions of dollars awarded. They've made fantasy sports that it's of the daily variety, kind of accessible to everyone. And you can pick more or less to at least two players for a shot to win 200 times your cash. It's gone up to even 1,000 times your cash. You can get action on sports in most states, including California, Texas, Georgia. It is the only real money daily fantasy platform with an injury insurance policy, which is really, really great. They have the Flex Play as well. Lots of great stuff when it comes to Prize Picks. It's easy. It's fun. The app is really easy to use. So just download the Prize Picks app today. Use the code STUSPORTS and get $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup. It's $50 instantly when you play your first $5 lineup. The code is STUSPORTS on Prize Picks. Get your $50 instantly when you play only $5. You don't even have to win to get that money. Might as well take advantage of it. Prize Picks, run your game, and of course, go Birds.
Kaffee in seiner besten Form. Mit Cubo wird jeder Kaffee auf Knopfdruck zum Genussmoment. Denn mit der neuen Cubo One Kapselmaschine von Chibo genießt du feinsten Spitzenkaffee aus besonderen Anbaugebieten. Vollmundige Aromen dank innovativer Press-Brew-Technologie und über 17 Sorten Kaffee für jeden Geschmack. Erlebe Premium-Kaffee schon ab 29 Euro. Entdecke jetzt die Cubo Kapselmaschinen in deiner Chibo-Filiale und auf chibo.de.
I'm joined once again by Glenn Beck. He has a brand new special coming up tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern. Tonight, it's the real reason Trump wants Greenland and the Panama Canal. Mm-hmm. So be tuned. Stay tuned for that. Glenn, because I have thought that. Like, he's very focused on these things. He really does want them. This is not like a fake thing. And when the Greenland thing first happened, people were like, oh, he's just trolling them or whatever.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like the Gulf of America.
Yeah. But he really legitimately does want these things.
Yeah. Because he wants, he's going to put TRU in Panama in big letters and MP in Greenland so you could see it from space.
So you zoom back out enough.
Yeah, and you're like, look. Oh, is this Trump? That's Trump land. But no, tonight you're going to learn so much history, like really cool history. We've wanted Greenland for a very long time. Denmark owns it. It's owned it since the 1700s. But Greenland doesn't like Denmark. And Denmark really doesn't like Greenland, honestly. They're paying them $500 million a year for their social security and everything else. And they don't ever use it. They don't use it for its minerals or anything. Donald Trump wanted it the first time around. And the president of Denmark said, because Trump said, I'm coming over to talk to you about it. And he said, you can come over, but you're not talking about Greenland. It's not for sale. We're not interested. And Trump said, okay, then I don't have anything to talk to you about. And that humiliated the president of Denmark. And the world kept turning.
Really?
Yeah.
Amazing.
And so this time, I mean, right at, I think it was 2017, we finally put our embassy in Greenland. We didn't have one since 1953. Because Denmark was pissed at, they've been pissed at us for a long time, probably because they sold us the U.S. Virgin Islands. We bought them from Denmark, okay? This used to be done all the time. You would buy property, but now suddenly, because Trump wants to do it, that never happens. You'll understand why and how strategically important it is. And even, you know, Denmark says they want to be free and independent. That's good. I want them to be free and independent too. But I would like you to consider not being free and independent because of what that means with Russia and China. If Greenland falls into the wrong hands, we're in deep, deep trouble. We protected Denmark and Norway and all of those places from Greenland during World War II. We stationed a lot of troops there. Then when it comes to Panama, Panama wasn't even a country until Theodore Roosevelt. I mean, it's a little dicey there because, you know.
A lot of the Roosevelt stories get a little dicey.
A little dicey, yeah, because it was Colombia, and we wanted to build the canal, and Colombia said no. And so then we sent in our CIA and went, you know, prior to the CIA, but the same kind of thing. We sent them in there like, hey, you know, you guys should have a revolution and start your own country called Panama. And they did. And Panama, it helped.
We also helped later revolutions, right? I mean, we have the history here. This is not just like some random place.
Yeah. It does feel a little bit like Crimea, you know, America saying, hey, we own that. It's historically ours. Yeah. Let's be careful with that argument.
That argument's been made a lot through history.
Yeah.
And it's not always a good outcome.
Right. Trump is very focused on this. And the Panamanian president just said it will never go back to America. It is ours and it will remain ours. I don't think that's going to hold enough water for the president, but we'll see.
Do you think it's a negotiation to just improve our situation there, or do we really need to own it? I mean, if we could get China out of it and have
I think if we could own it without war, we should own it.
Yeah.
If we could buy it, negotiate that we operate it, then that would be a good number two.
You know, Glenn, I've noticed over history, one of the things you don't do as a country is give things of vast strategic
value,
importance up to say, well, we just wanted to make sure everyone felt good about us.
Yes.
Let me give you quite an example about that. One of the largest holders of nuclear weapons was the country of Ukraine at one point. right after the fall of the Soviet Union. And they were like, oh, let's just give them back. We don't need it. It'll show everyone that we are the good guys here. And how did that work out? Is it working out now? Probably not that well.
No.
Probably not that well.
I mean, there's a country that... I'm glad they don't have nuclear weapons, but could have used them. It would have kept the
It would
Russians,
have stopped this.
Would have stopped
it wouldn't it. Have happened. And, you know, I mean, again, nuclear weapons have, generally speaking, been forces for good.
But the good news is we replaced them with a whole bunch of biolabs.
That's good.
So, you know, they have a lot of illegal, you know, biological weapons.
Trump came out today basically about the Russia thing. It was like, this war never would have happened if I was in office. But Putin needs to come to the table and make a deal here. This is the beginning of his attempt, I think, to solve this.
Well, the New York Times, I think it was the New York Times, did question a spokesperson at the White House saying, you know, he broke a promise to his people that it would be solved within 24 hours. And 24 hours have gone by and it's not solved yet.
Amazing. Because he did solve kind of the Gaza war before getting into office.
Yeah.
At least partially.
Partially. The hostages are coming home. Yeah. So that's what he said.
So we only got one of the two. I mean, geez, yeah.
No. Why isn't there global peace overnight?
I know.
Yeah. But he will solve. I mean, Biden made that almost impossible to solve.
Yes.
Without Russia really getting something. I find it interesting that we know Russia is going to do that. Russia is going to play real hardball with the United States as the broker because of what Biden did. And it's interesting that he is saying Putin is screwing his country up. I mean, he's taking a very anti-Putin stance as negotiation.
Interesting. I'll see how that goes out because I've been told they're good buddies and he was a Russian asset since 1987. I'm a little confused on how this works.
Right. But he's talking about, you know, cutting off even more oil and gas and everything else and speaking out against Putin. And he's a Russian asset, but the guy who took money from China and then gave China everything that they wanted, definitely not a Chinese
asset.
Good guy.
Good guy. Just a family guy. That's just a family guy.
Yeah.
Let me bring this one up to you because this is a concerning thing for me. We've had a lot of good news, a lot of good things going on today. We spent a lot of time on that on radio, all the good things, the positive outlook for the future. And that's all true. However, I did get this message today, and it made me pause. This is from one of our listeners for the radio show, Philip James. He says, I am worried. Glenn Beck is not full of gloom and doom. That means something is going to go horribly wrong. Stu, please fix Glenn. So I can't fix you. That'll never happen. But like, usually when you get positive and optimistic, terrible things are right around the corner.
I have noticed that pattern throughout my life. I'm not saying, here's the caveat here. Bad things are coming. They're coming. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's going to be a reaction to this and there's going to be something that happens. I just think right now we're on the right track and America has the best chance of saving itself I've ever seen. So I'm not my usual, we're all going to die. I'm kind of back to where I used to be before 9/11, and that is, okay, I'm fairly optimistic, but, you know, tough times, you know, things could happen. You know, people could fly airplanes into buildings,
right,
and that will change things. Mm-hmm. I'm fairly optimistic. I mean, at least give me this week.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's okay to have a little
start
bit of
seeing things
afterglow.
Shake out and the reaction. I mean, they're delaying Department of Homeland Security. They're delaying the DNI appointment. I mean, they are, and they're doing it in ways, Defense Department, with Pete Hegseth, that is an abomination.
Yeah.
None of that is true.
Have you ever seen a news organization run with a story that wasn't about a Republican, wasn't about a conservative, where there was an allegation of abuse and the person who was supposedly abused is outwardly saying it didn't occur?
No.
That's never what happens, right? The person who is abused is the one making the accusation typically,
correct.
Right?
You couldn't take that to a court of law.
No, of course not.
You're not the person that was supposedly raped or abused or whatever it is. You can't bring this case to court. This person says it didn't happen. They're the ones.
Right.
That need to file the charge, and yet the Democrats, and I really think, who was the congressman that was, or the senator that was saying, so if there was abuse, If there was, just go with me. If there was abuse in your marriage, you would say that you should step down immediately. Remember that?
Yes.
And Pete wouldn't play that game. You're asking me about hypotheticals. I think that guy knew. They knew.
It's a fascinating tactic. They've been using it forever, right? These accusations from unnamed people. You've got that. You've got...
Well, this person... But wait a minute. This person, on paragraph 9 of the New York Times, it goes into Pete's wife, who wrote a letter to the ex-sister-in-law that's making these charges, saying, stop it. None of that is true. That didn't happen. You have the facts wrong, and this is the last time I'll talk to you about it. I'm CCing my attorney on this. So she's the one who is supposedly the beaten one or whatever happened to her is saying that's not true. I signed an affidavit in the court, and he signed an affidavit in court that no, none of this stuff was happening. We had to do that in court for our divorce. What are you doing? How do you know something I don't know?
I think, too, and is this part of the learning process for Trump in a second term, where, you know, look, Matt Gaetz came out. They came out with Matt Gaetz, and that kind of fell apart. And then they went on and moved on to Hegseth. And Hegseth looked for a little time that it was going to fall apart, too. And Trump just decided to hold the line on it. Just said, no. And now they can't move on to the next person. I mean, it seems like holding the line on Hegseth stopped the opposition to RFK, stopped the opposition to Tulsi. At least, I mean, I'm sure they'll still try, but like there's no momentum for this stuff. And it seems like if you make the decision, look, I'm holding the line on this. I don't believe any of this stuff. I'm not giving in. I don't care what it looks like. That stops so much other things.
If the president can continue to make the kind of progress that he has made this week, where it's overwhelming, where even the people that didn't want to vote for him but finally did, and just beyond those guys, when they're seeing this and going, you know, this could be really good. This could be really good. That's the vibe in the country right now. It's just the uber left and the media. They're done. They are done. If he continues to make good moves like he's moving, he is a phenomenon now. He's not just a president. He's not just a movement. He is a phenomena.
And as we're seeing with the Elon Musk Nazi stuff, it doesn't seem like they have any new tactics in their back pocket. And they're just going, they've learned literally nothing from what
the
just
the president
happened.
Should do what he did with at the National Cathedral. Ignore it, move on. I thought it was a bad sermon. Oh, well.
Oh, well. All right, Glenn Beck, his new special coming up tonight. You're going to learn a lot about not only Panama, but Greenland and
why it's important.
Why it's important and what Trump's thinking. You know, why is he doing this? Because this was not like number one reason why people voted for him, right? No. The Panama Canal. There's a reason for it, though. You're going to find out about it tonight. The real reason, Trump wants Greenland and the Panama Canal. It's always, you can watch on Blaze TV. Go to blazetv.com or go to stewdoesamerica.com. Enter the code promo, the promo code is Stu for $20 off your annual subscription. Glenn, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Sehr gut, sehr gut, sehr gut.
Sehr gut?
Wieso Steuer ist sehr gut? Das sagen ganz viele.
Cool, wer sagt das?
Stiftung Warentest, Computerbild, Focus Money, Chip, Finanztipp, such dir was aus.
Mega, aber das ist doch bestimmt kompliziert.
Nö, einfach Foto von der Lohnsteuerbescheinigung machen und fertig.
Klingt sehr gut.
Ist sehr gut. Hol dir dein Geld zurück mit Wieso Steuer.
The sky is falling.
Last year, the number of close calls between commercial airliners has surged to nearly 3 per week.
Stop, stop, we're 2937, stop.
Half the controllers in the country are working 6-day weeks, 10-hour days.
Major hubs and critical facilities are extremely understaffed.
It's the ultimate mind game. It's all up here.
It's like a massive puzzle.
We have a reported controller shortage of about 2,000.
We're going to know a heck of a lot more about transportation when this is over.
Manufacturing issues, government incompetence, the COVID pandemic, absurd diversity policies. We're traveling thousands of miles across the country to figure out what has changed and why it matters.
Over 900 would-be air traffic controllers were denied the opportunity because they had the wrong skin color.
I've read that they still utilize floppy disks.
They're utilizing identity politics.
The permanent bureaucracy at the FAA decided that it was producing too many white men to become air traffic controllers.
So you take the technical test, you get 100%. Then you take the biographical test. How do you do on that?
So I ended up failing.
Can't get replacement antennas. 3% of its workforce should be disabled. 50-year-old radar system.
All these airplanes moving in different places, different altitudes, different speeds.
How is this legal?
It's not.
What can we do?
Slippery slope.
No!
Is anybody listening?
I'm Stuber Gear, and this is Blaze Originals.
I feel like becoming an air traffic controller is hard. Figuring out that we should not judge people on the basis of the color of their skin is easy.
BlazeOriginals.com/Stu. Go check it out. And the reason I bring that up is because it's a fundamental and a great basis for, let's say, a new administration looking to solve the problems in the skies. Trump has fired the heads of TSA, Coast Guard, and GUTS, Key Aviation Safety Advisory Committee. And this is a lot of the stuff that we've been talking about on that Blaze Originals, BlazeOriginals.com/Stu, if you want to check it out. Members of the Aviation Security Committee received a memo Tuesday saying the department is eliminating the membership of all advisory committees as part of the commitment to eliminating the misuse of resources and ensuring that DHS activities prioritize our national security. The Aviation Security Committee, which was mandated by Congress after 1988 and the Pan Am bombing, will technically continue to exist, but won't have any members to carry out the work of examining safety issues at airlines and airports. Now, of course, this is part of a larger plan to make sure that our security is improved and we're not focusing on DEI nonsense all the time. Trump orders all federal diversity, equity, and inclusion employees placed on paid leave. Now, I would like them to be paid on unpaid leave and also just fired. That's not, of course, how the law always works. These are, you got to unwind everything in the federal government. There's a bureaucracy there. It is very, very, it's terrible. And it is important that you do these things. Of course, you got to do them the right way. And I will say, Trump came into office and was not particularly popular president. And, it's not that he wasn't, didn't do a good job or whatever, but he was divisive. A lot of people on the left obviously hated him. A lot of the moderate voters out there did not like him either. And his approval rating hung around, between 43% and 36% of when it comes to approval throughout most of his presidency. Let me show you this. This is a new poll that is out from Reuters, and it's got him at 47%. And if you look at the red graph here, you can see he started around 47% when he started, dropped down very quickly to the upper 30s, and hung out between the upper 30s and low 40s his entire presidency until after January 6th, where he dropped all the way down to about 33% approval rating. Joe Biden took office and it was around 55-60% approval rating. Took about a year to get him down to where he would spend the rest of his term, which was in the upper 30s, ending his presidency at about 37% approval rating. So Donald Trump takes a plus 10 into his first days in office. It's important, of course, to understand you get a nice little period here at the beginning. You usually get higher approval ratings at the beginning, and when things start happening in the country, things fall. This is why it's important to get these things done early. All these important things we talked about, get them done quickly, because you never know when a 9/11 is around the corner. You never know when there's some tragedy around the corner that's going to derail your entire presidency. So take initiative and get things done quickly. It's exactly what Donald Trump has tried to do. Los Angeles had all these terrible fires, and we've heard a lot about that. A space larger than the size of San Francisco has burned. There are at least 25 people dead. 400,000 people have been left without power. 180,000 people have been forced to evacuate with really hardly any time to get necessities. Imagine finding yourself in that type of position. Hopefully you're not out there and not dealing with it. But what if you not only can get the things that you need, you might have lost all your possessions, but you also need your medications. Your medications might have been left in bottles at a burned down building. What if you can't get them from your pharmacy for the same reason? What if it's a supply chain issue? There is something you can do to ensure you and your loved ones have medical care when it's needed, and that's the Jace case. It is a personalized emergency kit that contains essential medications that are treating the most common and deadly bacterial infections. It provides 5 life-saving antibiotics for emergency use. Just got to fill out a simple form online and you will have it in case you need it. And they even have ivermectin on hand. If you want to add that on, you can do it as well. Jace.com. Use the code STU10. Get a checkout. At checkout, you get a discount on your order right now. It's Jace.com, Jase.com. The code is STU10. STU10 is the code, and it's at Jace.com, Jase.com.
Let me hear you all say E-L-G-S-E-S, Eagles! Let's go, Birds!
Let's go, Birds. Yes, the correct sentiment. Maybe not the right spelling. Look, I never backed anybody from Philly's voting abilities. They don't vote the best people into office. But still, she was right on one thing, of course, which was go, Birds.